Good evening and welcome to Family Matters. This is Jillie Giese, and as I always tell you on Family Matters, I am the president of the Parental Alienation Awareness Organization International. We are an organization that creates awareness and educates the public and professional sector on the remedies, results, and behaviors of parental alienation. So if you're having a problem right now with anything related to parental alienation, if you're a target parent, if you're a grandparent, aunt, aunts, uncles, cousins, any member of the family that isn't speaking to this child that's been alienated, please give us a call for ways to combat that, and we will give you different avenues that you can traverse to try to help your situation at this moment. We are paawareness.org. We welcome your inquiries to our website and calls to the phone that's listed there on the website. Tonight, I feel like it's a little bit like it's Groundhog Day because we have done this interview once already, and there was some technical difficulties, and we lost a lot of the show. So we're going to be talking again tonight to Dr. James Wardner from Florida, who is just a lovely man who has gone through hell as it relates to his children, as many of us have as alienated parents. Welcome, Jim. Hi.
Thank you very much.
Hi. Thank you for being here once again. And I know, you know, I say it's Groundhog Day for me, but boy, it is Groundhog Day for you because you've been going through this for years and years and years. So what I want you to do is just lay out chronologically and very succinctly what's happened to you up until now over the last 10 years.
Well, over the last 10 years, if you go back 10 years to my children, I always had what I would say is an awesome relationship with my children.
And you have five children, is that correct?
Yeah, I had five. When I was thrown out of the house, I had four, and there was one was 7 months, about to be born in two more months, and I was thrown out of the house before the birth. But I always had a great relationship with my children. They used to run up the driveway and run up into my arms when I would get home, and they were always happy to see me, and we always had fun together. We always did all kinds of crazy fun things. And over the 10 years, really year after year, month after month, and day after day, I saw my relationship with each of the children become depleted, kind of lose oxygen, if you will. It got hypoxic, and little by little, it seemed like each and every relationship died. And it's bizarre, it's hard to believe, and it's very discouraging. And I have a sensitivity in me for certainly all of the people out there, and I know there's hundreds of thousands of people, and maybe millions, who are suffering because they can't get access to their children or have lost some form of relationship with them, or maybe have become so disgusted they don't even want anything to do with them. And I believe even at that level, it's a result of, you know, what started out as something that could have been fixed early on if anybody cared to fix it.
Well, and I truly know how you feel. And, you know, often people will say, well, I know how you're feeling. But I truly do, because as you know, I am the mother of four children and have been alienated from them for 6 years, as is the rest of my entire family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. And it is a horrible thing. And as you pointed out, and many people don't realize this, all across our nation and all around the world, there are hundreds of thousands of parents, grandparents, and immediate families who have no contact with their children or minimal contact. It's very sad, and we all have broken hearts, but the real problem is the hearts, minds, and souls of our children are being taken from us, and these children are being destroyed. And the future of our country is really at stake, isn't it?
Well, we start off with the issue of parental alienation. Parental alienation often comes as a keystroke to divorce, but ultimately, when children lose a parent or both parents, it's the destruction of the family. And I personally believe that there are forces now that have been put in place to kind of like when you cut a block of wood, you start off by putting an axe and you create a wedge, and then over a period of time, with stronger blows, you can completely break that log into pieces or into two pieces. And this is what's being accomplished now. You have, in essence, maybe a mother and a father who don't want to be with one another anymore for whatever reason. And as they go through the process, as the attorneys become involved and judges become involved and the system becomes involved, then little by little, the breakage that could have been minor, meaning that two adults who are hopefully of adult capacity and understand that they just flat out don't want to be with one another anymore, these two adults, the effect of that broken relationship becomes a rainstorm of, we used to call it acid rain up north, on the children, because the children take the brunt of essentially losing at least one of the parents, and in many cases, one of the parents totally. And I think in the case of parental alienation, which makes it really a travesty, is that the children never know that they have been brainwashed to the point that they don't want to see or have a relationship with that parent who loves them and wants to give them things, show them things, read them books, take them places. And so the kids grow up without one parent, and it's worse than the death of a parent, because the death of a person, you know, you bury the individual and you say, gee, that's a shame, and you have your days of sadness, and it's over because it's final. But in these cases, nothing is final, and the courts, the lawyers, and all of the game playing that goes on within the system push this travesty to really it could be pushed almost to an infinite level, or until the money runs out, one or the other.
Right. You know, and it's so, I think it's so important that you point out that the death of a child is so final, and the grieving process is there for a parent. You never get over that. But when you are an alienated parent, and in my case, my children are just across town. So there were many days when they were in high school and driving that I would pass them on the road, you know, at 3 o'clock after school was out. And it was it was as if the wound was opened every single day and ripped open, and you bleed, you know, all night long, closes up again, and then it happens again maybe 2 days later because they're just across town. I know a lot of alienated parents, I can think of one woman in particular that was in Pennsylvania and alienated from her children, and she just couldn't take it anymore because she would always see them. So she moved to Colorado. And is dealing with it much better there, but total alienation from her children, no contact at all. And I just looked at a message from her before we got on this call today, and she was so excited, and I was excited for her, but also sad, because she was elated at the fact that her son had unblocked her from Facebook. And when these little tiny movements of these kids are so just uplifting to these target parents, it's exciting, but it's very, very sad at the same time.
Well, it's exciting because the poor parent wants an opportunity to have a relationship that they should have with their prodigy, which is their children.
Mm-hmm.
The issues that we face today, though, are that the courts turn parents, one or the other, into a visitor. And once that parent has been converted from a parent to a visitor, then that parent loses all parental rights. And not only do you lose the rights to be a parent, you have no more opportunity, literally, to be a parent. You become that individual that picks them up on Friday afternoon and takes them out to eat at McDonald's, and you watch them play in the McDonald's. I mean, I've seen parents do this. standing mm-hmm. there like bumps on a log, watching their children at the playground at McDonald's. And that is the extent of what they have been given by the court for their parenthood. And what's mind-boggling to me, again, until your ox is gored, you don't seem to be aware that there's other people's oxes that are being gored. When it's your turn to take it on the chin, then suddenly you become aware of other people's problems. I had a grandmother call me recently saying that her son had no access to his kids, therefore she had no access to, I was a daughter, to the mm-hmm. daughter, and there was no excuse for it. So she was feeling the effects of the parental alienation that was being shown toward him. Well, no news to anybody that's already been through this, but what she said was, you know, I didn't really understand all this parental alienation stuff until now. However, but now I get it. So it's the travesty is created the very first day that a couple goes before the general magistrate or before a judge, and one of those parents is told to leave the life of their children. And I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Don't call a person a parent when you've taken away all their parental rights, and that father or mother does no longer has a chance to truly be a parent to their own children. And you can tell me the story that in your theoretical mindset that you're still allowing this person to be a parent, and the person who you've given custody to really needs to make sure that he or she understands that she has to make a good relationship to the benefit of the children from the other parent. But hello, please. I mean, does anybody not get that these two people are in a war and that they don't mean to be kind to one another and they really don't want each other to have access to the children? I mean, it's not like this is normal behavior for people who are emotionally bankrupt toward one another. So they don't want their material goods shared, and somebody who's trying to get rid of a father or someone who's trying to get rid of a mother, they don't want their children around that person either because they think that person is despicable now or they're evil or they don't have the same musical tastes or they don't like the same move, whatever they dream up. Those children have lost that parent. But we got this game we're playing here in the United States. We take the parent, we dispose of the parent, but we still allow him to be called a parent because that makes him feel just a little bit better.
You're exactly right, Jim, and the court system is definitely a contributor to the problems that exist in the parental alienation arena. I want to point out another scenario that also exists, and it doesn't always have to be the courtroom that starts out the system of parental alienation. In my case, I was a custodial parent, and started out on January 9th, 2005, before we ever got into court about the kids. And my alienation of my children was complete within 4 weeks. They were not speaking to me or my parents. And so before we ever got into court, the narcissistic, selfish parent that is looking for emotional justice toward that target parent is the person who instigates that process, then is aided by the court system. So there's I see it really as two separate scenarios. And when the people that are lowered to visitor status, it's a whole different dynamic, but the same end result.
It's so wrong, and I think what's really the most shocking is that in America and perhaps around the world, I don't know people who are going through this around the world, but I know it's happening. But certainly in America, there's been a certain amount of brainwashing to create in adults this concept that what's going on is okay. Mm-hmm. Somehow or another, men and some women, mostly men, 90% are men, have been taught somehow that it's okay for them to be kicked out of their home and to have to pay child support and to see their children every other weekend. Somewhere along the line, that reached some kind of level of acceptability. And I just I don't know how we got to this point, but it's insane to accept that as being normal. And what you hear a lot of people say is, well, you don't need to worry. You go live your life. You go work your job. And when the children become 21,
they'll come back around.
25, they'll figure it all out. They'll come zipping back around.
Don't you wish you had a dollar for every time you heard that?
Yeah, and I don't say too much to that theory, but I do reply sometimes now that concept is a ridiculous concept, because what is that person that comes around when now they're 21 or 25, if and when they do? First of all, certainly
nobody that we knew before.
Amen. That's exactly what I was going to say, Jill. You read my mind. This is a person that didn't grow up with you. This is a person who does not have your values, your religion, your culture, your appreciation for music or art. You didn't take this child to the symphony. You didn't teach this child how to play the piano. You didn't get to go to his or her games with him. You didn't go sit down at night and review their homework and speak to the teachers and have an influence. They didn't see what types of programs you watched. They didn't look over your shoulder to ask you what kind of book you were reading, Daddy. No, this is a complete stranger to you. It's an adult, and you probably have more in common with somebody, you know, in some other country now than you have with your own child. They recognize that somehow or another your DNA is part of them, mm-hmm. but the relationship of parent and child and what could have been created and should have been created in their growing up years is lost to them, and they will never know what they have missed.
You're exactly right, and that's so very sad. And I feel like, you know, if that person comes back to me, I want to try to put everything in the past and revitalize the relationship that we once had. But I almost feel like at this point that's an impossible thing after 6, 7, 8, 9. Some people are 28 years into this. It's impossible to revitalize what you once knew, because, as you say, that person has taken a different avenue in their life than they would have if they would have had their mom or their dad that's been missing, and then the injection of the thoughts that particular mom or dad might have added to the makeup of that human being.
That's exactly the case. And we know, I mean, research has shown us, everybody knows that's willing to look, that when children grow up without both parents, there's just flat out more problems for the kids.
Sure.
There's more children doing drugs. There's more children who are sexually involved. There's more kids that end up in detention centers or in juvenile delinquency centers or whatever. But, you know, you'd think that the people who are in the justice system, so-called justice system, you'd think that they have an understanding that when they separate children from their parents, that this is in fact exactly what they're doing. The divorce started the process, likely, and mm-hmm. now you go to court, and between the lawyers and the judge, they put fertilizer on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have lawyers like the ones that I had to literally pay out of my own pocket to go into court and lie about me, lie about my behavior, lie about my own children, and then I'm paying those guys to do that because we have to keep the playing field level. I mean, this just doesn't make sense, and I'm feeling myself as I'm speaking become a little bit angry here, and
that's okay.
And it's my frustration is that the lawyers have created a system for themselves
mm-hmm.
that no matter what is the case, no matter what is fair, no matter what is just, no matter what is in the best interest of the children, they first and foremost are going to get their take, regardless of what's in the best interest of the children. And I have seen this firsthand, and I know others have seen this also firsthand, and I think it's just despicable, and I think these lawyers are without a conscience, and even my own lawyer, who I know is trying to do a good job, has come to accept the system for what it is. And when he calls me up and says, well, this is what was decided today, he doesn't get why I respond with, you got to be kidding me, because he's within the process. This is how he gets paid, and he's a lawyer. So My analogy recently was, if you're a doctor, if you're a surgeon, and you, if you're aware that you can go into a hospital and work in perfectly antiseptic conditions with sterilized instruments, a fine staff, have super duper lights so that you have visibility and you can see what you're doing, that is an ideal scenario. But if you're working in a war zone, you're working under a tent, and there's blood and grime splattering everywhere, and you're trying to save people's lives, and you have inadequate staff, and you have inadequate materials, and you have inadequate instrumentation and surgical instruments, there is no antisepsis anywhere. And you don't realize that there's a difference between the hospital environment and the one that you're now working in this war zone. I think that's the problem with our lawyers today. They don't realize that they're working in a system that is despicable from the top to the bottom, but all of them, because it's the system by which they get paid, have accepted it as this is the way it is.
They have. They've all accepted it for this is the way it is. There's a few out there who are still trying to do what's right. And, you know, I liken it to politicians. That politicians, and I remember when my father became a state legislator and then a congressman, you know, he went in to do good. But after being there for a while, the system works on you, and you become part of the system. These lawyers, I believe, you're exactly right. They don't see. They become complacent. And they are looking out for their practice, the best interest of their practice, and not the best interest of the child. That is secondary to what's going on in their minds. They need to put their kids through school, and then maybe they'll think about what's going to happen to your kids. But in my case, the lawyer that represented my ex-husband is just vicious about using children to create adversarial relationships in divorce situations, and is known for dragging them on for years and years and years. Mine went on from 1996 until 2010. So, you know, think about how much money that man made over that period of time, and then he does it 100 times over in this county where I am located. Mm-hmm. So these people are making money, and then you add in the GAL and the court-appointed advocates and everybody else that latches on like leeches to the system, and the cottage industry is formed, and then you get in, and it's like a whirlwind, and you can't get out unless you say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to not be involved in this anymore, which is what we did in February of this year. I'm not going to be involved in this anymore. I'm going to settle out. My kids were of age. There was nothing else to do with my children. And we're just going to settle this bifurcated issue of financial and children and move on. And so many people are just caught up in it. And it's absolutely horrific. And I feel so badly for the people who break themselves financially over this. And I know that, you know, we paid out almost $1 million. I know you're at that level. I think about my friend Alec Baldwin, who was $2.3 million. Think of the good that could have been done with the money that we've spent.
Well, it's people would say, and I hear this on the news all the time, that you have people who are running government. We need to get some people in there who really know how to run a business. We don't have anybody in government that knows how to run a business. We need to get people who can understand what it takes to pay a payroll and to do this and to do that. Well, guess what? I'm here to tell you, they know exactly how to run a business. They have put a business together called the family court business, and everybody is making a ton of money at the expense of the family and the children and the parents. I think some people know that the federal government offers a stipend for the state for all the money they get out of child support.
Sure.
So this state game is subsidized by your federal government. So that's why they've got to stick it to anybody to get as much child support as humanly possible. And that's why it has to be never in the best interest of the children, because it's only about one thing in this family court system, and that's the almighty dollar. And if you don't have enough money, you won't see your kids. In the last 2.5 years, we haven't had one hearing where they've talked about my children. In not the hearing of today, but the one about a month ago, in a 37-page hearing, they had 77 times talked about attorney's fees. Twice they talked about the children, and they only talked about the children to state where they were currently living. This system doesn't care about the children. We have a custody evaluation. It's been sitting on somebody's desk for 2 years. Do they open it? Do they read it? Do they care if it says the children are being abused psychologically and emotionally? No, they don't. Nobody cares. They're not going to open that up, nor are they going to do anything about it. They say that they don't want to continue this. Just a few days ago, they said they weren't going to seek to continue the trial. Here we are 5 days before our trial was supposed to begin, and they decided to continue the trial. Why did they decide to continue the trial? Because now there's a new attorney in place. Why is there a new attorney in place? Because the other two took a hike, the other two who were promoting parental alienation. So this game just goes on and on. And, oh, by the way, in the hearing today, they ordered me, because we're going to keep the playing field level. I don't see this kids. I don't see them at all. But we're going to keep the playing field level. We're going to keep the playing field level for the children so that they can both have a parent. Oh, no, we're not going to keep that playing field level. We're going to keep the legal court system playing field level, which means that always, whatever attorney walks into the courtroom, he's going to get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. And if one party can show that they don't work or they don't have enough to pay their poor little bills, then the other party takes up the slack. So today, I was ordered to pay, within 2 weeks, $43,000 to her attorney to come in and represent her in this case that's been going on now for the 11th year. And guess what? If I could make turnips fall from the sky, I would have no problems doing that. But I'm not the Federal Reserve Bank. I'm just a dentist. And even dentists in 2 weeks can't make $43,000. But when I said to the attorney, well, now, what happens if I don't have $43,000 extra dollars by the 28th of this month? Well, he says, and this is the thing that torques me, he says that as if this is a normal, natural deal. Well, you'd just be in contempt of court.
It's exhausting. What's your plan, Jim?
Well, I'm still numb from today because I kind of knew this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now it's been proven to have arrived. We still have a custody report that's extremely volatile.
And has not been read by anyone.
Even though it says the children are being abused in the environment that they're in, no one will read this report. And so from my take on it, and of course, I'm just a little old parent. I got nothing to say about anything. My take on this is that the people who are allowing this to continue are part and partial and party to the abuse that's currently going on.
I absolutely agree with you. Can you be more specific about what is written and who wrote this report that hasn't been read by any judge?
2 years ago, out of six in it, I'm trying to think of the exact date. Both sides put three names on the table for the judge.
Mm-hmm.
We had three people who we knew or could verify had special experience in high conflict divorce, which mm-hmm. there's no higher conflict divorce than what I have, and in parental alienation. And then the other side threw three names in the hat as well. So a total of six names and the resumes and all of the research and what these psychologists had done. And the judge chose one of the individuals of the six. I did not choose. Now, there's a newspaper article floating around out there that says that I chose a psychologist, and the psychologist agreed that – it sounds like he did my bidding. I paid him to do my bidding, and he did it. That's a bunch of baloney. What happened was the judge chose this individual, but, of course, the state didn't want to pay for what they court ordered. So I, as like I pay for everything, I was court-ordered to pay for the selected psychologist, the one selected by the court, by the judge. Soon thereafter, this judge recused himself, and another judge picked up the case. The custody evaluation was very, very thorough. I was interviewed, she was interviewed, kids were interviewed, all kinds of testing was done. Any information that I wanted to give or that she wanted to give, witnesses, anything, he entertained as viable. And it took a long, long time. You know, obviously with five children involved, it was extensive. But the bottom line was, it was very negative toward my ex. And the biggest concern that I have is that there was even things in the report that I myself did not know, did not recognize, and had not understood. There's this horrible dynamic that's taking place through the parental alienation process, through the brainwashing process, where these kids are being manipulated to the point where they're almost unrecognizable as my own children anymore. And the evaluation says that in so many words and in many different ways with numerous examples, too many examples to even state. And the wildest thing is that you can't get a judge to read the report. It's mind-boggling to me. And as a matter of fact, things were going so far awry that my attorney asked that one of the attorneys step down. Actually, it was the one after the one who stated that we're going to have a court-ordered psychologist and he's going to do a custody evaluation, because we could not get a fair hearing in this courthouse. There was all kinds of behind-the-back deals between attorneys and the judge, ex-party games. And
no, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So anyway.
I'm being sarcastic for those of you.
I know you are. I know you are. I know you are. But anyway, the judge recused herself at that point in time, and actually without hearing on any topic whatsoever, immediately this whole case was moved to a different part of the county and a different courthouse. And now in that courthouse, the first hearing that was had, I think it was the first, I lose so track after so many things,
sure.
It was all about attorney's fees, and there's not been any discussion about anything else other than attorney's fees for the last 2.5 years. So, you know, and in the next 2 weeks, I'm supposed to dream up $43,000 net now. Jill, you probably know how much money you have to earn after taxes.
Sure.
To come up with $43,000. You know,
right.
It's a lot of money. And this is on top of the child support, which is almost a net of $60,000 per year. So you've got to make pretty much $100,000 to be able to net $60,000 and hand it off to somebody else. So my office manager chuckles when she hands me my check. She says, you know, you're the lowest paid employee we have in your office, Doc. It's a joke. And the system is the problem, because the kids right now, well, they have a stepfather. I guess they call him a stepfather. I don't know, but he's totally taken my place, and his mother and his father now have become my parents' grandparents. They have no contact with my mother, but who cares in the courthouse? As long as the paychecks are getting signed, as long as the cash is flowing, they don't care. They don't care.
So, Jim, what right now, tonight, if you could say what you wanted to happen, do you want your children to come and live with you? I mean, tonight, if a judge would say, I've read the report, your children need to come to your house tonight, what would you do? What would be the plan of action for them? I mean, do you want them to be, obviously, if they're not recognizable, there's three levels of parental alienation: mild, moderate, and severe. They're obviously at the severe level, as are my children. They need to be in a reunification program. Couldn't take those kids tonight.
This is the problem that I'm dealing with it now. I'm not dealing with it now because I don't know that I'll ever see these children again. But the problem that we have is, yes, these children have been under attack. And the attack has been mental, psychological, emotional, and it has also been physical in that they've been hauled off to numerous doctors for examinations and all kinds of things. So, to be honest, I would need help. I would need somebody to counsel with and to give me guidance and direction as to how to deal with the situation at hand. Now, I have had, the report indicates this as well, I've had a wonderful relationship with them in the past. And the doctor who did the custody evaluation felt that if I could get back into their lives, we could develop the bonding necessary to get back to what we once had. And he based that on so many different reports from people who knew that I had been a good father, I had, you know, carted the kids to gymnastics and swimming and tennis and golf and all over the place. So he felt like, based upon previous experience, you know, you're going to make it if we can get the kids back and get them safe. But in the situation that they're in now, of course, every single day that goes by, it deepens the severity of the alienation. And I think it's common knowledge now that I got arrested in my own dental office while I was seeing patients. One of my patients kidded me about it the other day, being arrested for something I didn't do. I said, "Oh, you knew about that?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "I knew about that." And then he told me the story of his son that's gone through some problems. So he has some sympathy in that regard. But what does that mean to your children when the children see that every time you pick them up, you have a police car following you? Mm-hmm. Every time you pick them up, there's a DCF investigation, and they have to be questioned and interrogated. And when you turn your back, your kids are being taken to a psychologist or counselors, and they're coached to tell the psychologist and the counselors that, you know, my daddy's bad, my daddy has a stick outside the garage and he hits me with a stick and all this crazy stuff. My daddy doesn't feed me. My daddy locks me in a car and he keeps me in a car, locked in the car overnight. I mean, bizarre, wacko, crazy stories, never one verifiable, never one. After 12 DCF investigations, my dental license, 6 complaints against my dental license. Oh, by the way, 5 of them were negligence toward my own children when we couldn't get the ex to bring them in for examinations. And then on top of that, this might only apply to people who know a dentition, but we had caries and decay all over their mouths from all of the gum and candy and soda and everything that they're imbibing. So it's just... the point I'm trying to make is that what are little children supposed to think when people they respect, like teachers, like principals, like counselors, like psychologists, like policemen, are always trying to either keep you away from your daddy or arresting your daddy directly in front of you? I had adults leave my office. I had patients who said, "No, we're not coming to this office anymore. You got to be kidding me. He's trying to steal his kids. He's all in the paper. It's on the internet, blah, blah, blah." Well, if adults, thinking adults, think such things,
believe
what
that, right?
Little kids think, hello?
And then add on top of that, you know, the pulling, the constant pulling at their minds and their hearts and the choosing, pick me over your daddy. And then, of course, the money talks thing where they're being purchased through video games and cars and all of the things that add on top of the basic alienation, if you will. So it's something that just destroys these children, and that's what the alienator – I mean, we're dealing with personalities, you and I, I'm no longer dealing with it. You still are. But dealing with personalities that are – narcissistic and selfish and only looking out for themselves and not realizing what is happening to the psyche of their children.
When I go through, and I had to do it again recently because we had an expert witness who was wanting certain documentation. So again, and I hate doing it, I had to go through about 10 years of, and I can't go through every paper anymore. It's just, it's so voluminous, no one could possibly handle it. But you go through the high points, things that happened over the last 10 years. Here's an instance where this occurred. Here's an instance where that occurred. Here's an instance where something else occurred. And when I see the trauma that occurred, in especially from my oldest daughter, because really once they got her, it just trickled down the line after that. But what that poor girl has been through, probably stuff that she's either blocked out, doesn't remember, or doesn't want to remember, it breaks my heart to think that anyone would put their child through such emotional turmoil. It's mind-boggling to me. What would happen is sometimes I'd go to pick her up, and she would be in a state. I mean, just an unbelievable emotional state that I couldn't get her back. I couldn't even talk to her. She'd just be beside herself with anguish. And of course, I just picked them up. So what do I know? You know, I'm just leaving work, and I'm here. I am, and now we're going to go do something together. But I'm thinking, what in the world got us to this point? Well, then later on, I'd find out that she'd been taken out of school for 2 days, and she'd been, you know, psychologically worked over for a couple of days, and God only knows what she was thinking by the time, or what I would do, you know, or what I might not do by the time I got to be spending time with her. And it was just time after time after time after time of this kind of stuff. And then constantly she and other kids being taken to the doctor, totally unnecessarily to doctors, orthopedic doctors, neurologists, or regular physicians, counselors, psychologists. They took all of the kids to, she took all the kids to a psychologist to find out he's really not even a psychologist, although he portrays himself to be a psychologist, this guy in Daytona Beach. And he calls the DCF because what the kids tell him about my behavior is so bizarre and crazy that he thinks, oh my gosh, these kids are in horrible danger. Now, did he ever call me? No. Did he ever speak to anybody who knew me? No. Did he ever speak to anybody other than mom and the children? No. I mean, those are the only people he did speak to, are mom and the kids. So here you go again. This isn't a child. This is an adult. He's supposed to be educated. He's supposed to have a PhD. He's supposed to connect with me and let me know that he is having access to my kids. I never had a counselor or a psychologist who would allow me, and I didn't try, to take the kids to counseling without mother's knowledge. But time after time, in the school, out of the school, psychologists all over Volusia County, they did it to me. They took the kids. I never knew in one case. They took them for 8 months. And for 8 months, they psychoanalyzed and did whatever they did to the kids. It was only because I picked the kids up and they just happened to drop the ball, because they don't tell me anything. They've been trained not to tell Dad anything about what goes on in that house. But one of them one day dropped the ball. I found out about this counseling. Even when I called the counselors up, they gave me no information. I was told I was out of the loop. I wasn't going to be told anything. I had no rights to know anything. Well, hello, these are my kids. Well, it doesn't matter. So we had to get into the lawsuit mode. We had to threaten their licenses mode. Then we got what they had written when they were interviewing the kids. And that was absolutely shocking, because there wasn't an ounce of truth in any of it. The kids had been brainwashed to say all kinds of unbelievable and horrendous stuff. Stuff, who knows how children could dream up such things. And so in the end, the counselors had to drop out, but I had to make such a scene with the court that essentially I got into trouble over the darn thing, because I made such a scene that I wanted this counseling stopped, because I said, as a father, I think I have a right that my children are not purposely psychologically and emotionally abused. And whether everybody wants me to do it or not, I still have a God-given right to protect my kid. Maybe I don't have a state-given right. I don't apparently have any state rights. And certainly you don't have any constitutional rights. Please don't misunderstand. You don't have any constitutional rights to be a parent in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have your God-given rights, and you still should try to protect your kids where and when you can.
That is such the beauty of an alienator. They can make people believe anything they want to believe. They work on the children, and then they move on to the adults. And that's what just amazed me, was that an entire church full of people who had known me for 21 years immediately did a 360 and turned on me and believed everything that the alienator was telling them. And the character assassination that goes hand in hand with parental alienation is just marveling to me, that intelligent, educated, social people who've known you can believe what they believe about you after they've been told one time by an alienating parent. And the other thing that I think is just so amazing is people say, well, what did you do? Why don't your children like you? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Nobody will tell me what I did or what they've been told. And then I say to them, how do you explain, maybe I did do something wrong. If somebody would tell me what that was, I would be happy to rectify it. What did my parents do? What did my brother and sister and their children do? So when an entire family is alienated, I don't get why these people who believe this about you can't move on to the rest of the family and see that they've done nothing. It's just such a convoluted, messed up quagmire of just goo. I don't get it.
I have a question.
Ruthie, hi.
Hi, I've been listening carefully.
What's your question?
I was wondering, because I don't know, and I've been looking everywhere, and everyone has to be quiet and careful and respectful, teaching, teachers and nurses and policemen and anyone in any capacity to deal with issues in children or anything. If you see something visually or you hear something, or you witness an incident against a child, you don't have a choice but to turn it in. You have to call someone, get the principal, call the doctor. You have to turn that information in. It's mandatory. That's what mandatory reporting is. Now, in a case like this, because I've seen it in different cases, and in this one in particular, all of the detail, the horrid detail, sits in this family report, this family evaluation, this custody evaluation. And for 2 years, no one has read it. I was wondering, do attorneys and judges answer to anybody? Because in not looking at this report for 2+ years, they, I feel, have furthered the alienation, of course, and the abuse, of course, and lengthened it and added an additional 2 years. It's kind of like seeing a fire and letting it go off and not calling the fire department.
Ruthie, there's absolutely a council that oversees the behavior of lawyers. It's called the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission.
What about the judges? And do they have to answer to anybody, or are they kings and they don't answer to anyone?
No, they absolutely do. There is a governing body for judges that you can report what you think is an error in their judgment. And of course the appellate court is a device for people to appeal any kind of circuit court judges.
The reason I'm asking is just common sense. I mean, a cop went to the backyard of Philip Garrido and saw that he was carrying electricity to a tent in his backyard. And there he could have asked questions, but he didn't. He turned around and left because he got a satisfactory answer. Now those cops, boy, do they have some answering to do, because they walked away when they could have stopped that crime right there. They could have ended
well,
it there.
Well, unfortunately, Ruthie, and Jim, you can comment on this in just a second, but unfortunately, ARDC is nothing more than a venting organization for people who are upset with the bad representation that they've received from attorneys. The judges – advisory council or governing council is the same deal. I mean, they're merely there for you to vent. And I truly believe...
How does that happen, that they can commit these crimes, basically, and they're still in, they still have their position? How do they do that?
I can't answer it. I mean,
what happens in the case where a judge and a group of attorneys continue this and continue this and continue this and don't open the evaluation? I am convinced in my heart of hearts that they don't know what's in it. If they knew it, I don't know. It seems to me like they would be getting some criminal defense attorneys to protect themselves after adding 2 years to this travesty.
Jim, why don't you address that? And I mean, we've got to wrap it up in just a second, but why don't you talk to them right now and say what you hope will happen with that report?
Well, I don't know if there's any judges listening to me, but I think that, first of all, I have a degree as a teacher. I have a teaching certificate. I was a teacher. I was a coach. I have a master's degree in counseling. I've had many responsible positions in the school systems, and I have had numerous teams where I have had to get kids ready to participate and compete. And now I have a different kind of a profession, but it's responsible. I feel the need to perform well on every single patient that I see. In other words, bottom line is all of us have some responsibility in our careers to do the right thing. The thing I think that we're talking about here today and the thing that seems to be so disappointing is that we citizens of the United States of America and citizens of other countries in the world have been relegated to puppets where we are being told that we do not even have the right to parent our own children. We can be carted off to jail on an accusation or an allegation. We can be removed from the presence of our kids. Now, the fact of the matter is, I still have, on paper at least, 3 weekends a month with my kids and each Wednesday. But I don't exercise that option because my kids are so alienated. They don't want anything to do with me. If I drive down the road in front of where they live, if I'm lucky, I might get a wave. But more than likely, I'll get their back. So if I could say anything to any of the professional people who are out there listening, lawyers, judges, I would say, folks, you have a responsibility to do the right thing, just like a surgeon has a responsibility to do the right thing, and just like a teacher or a counselor. And I would say, you're not doing the right thing. You're not being complete. You don't read the pleadings. If they're too long, you decide to do something else. It's not right. It's not fair. Your system isn't fair. And you're really cheating the children. You're cheating children from having two parents, both of whom will love them. And you're allowing one parent to completely annihilate the other parent in the eyes of the kids, essentially killing that parent by killing their character, they're killing their reputation, and killing their love for their kids and their kids' love for that person. And if you don't understand how diabolical that is, I don't think you should be a judge or a lawyer. And that's what I would say to them.
Well said, my friend. Well said. I just am so hopeful that in the coming months, you can enter into a reunification process with your children, and hopefully a judge will read that report and see what is truly going on in their lives. So we are all going to keep our fingers crossed and keep our prayers coming your way that you will be reunited with your children, as we hope for all alienated or target parents that are alienated from their children, because parental alienation is real and it is destroying countless parent-child relationships every day. So, Jim, go forward and do the best that you can for your children. I know that you are, and we hope that we can be here by your side every step of the way and that you'll keep us posted on what's going on. And we will just lift you up every day and hope that that's something that the positive outcome for you and your children.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you very much. Thanks, Ruthie.
And I want to add that there are 72 different countries people from 72 different countries listening to this show, and I have no problem mentioning that the Florida Supreme Court is apparent in our server. If anyone needs to corroborate that, we will gladly send that notation to them. And you have to wonder why the Florida Supreme Court is listening to a case like this.
You really do wonder, and maybe they're finally getting it. Florida is full of alienated parents, as is the rest of the country and the rest of the world. And the Florida Supreme Court and the judges in Volusia County could be just instrumental in moving this case forward and reuniting this man with his children and being revolutionary in what they do in this case and many other alienated cases in their courtrooms.
I hope so, because otherwise they're going to wind up having to explain how it was that they chose to ignore such a critical report and add 2 additional years to this travesty.
Well, thanks a lot, both of you, and we will wrap it up for tonight, and we'll see you next time. Jim, hang in there. We're thinking of you.
Thanks, Jill. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
And what my heart has heard, well, it takes my breath away. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited, waited just to love you. Now that I've found you, you've got the look of love. It's on your face, the look, the time can't erase. Be mine tonight. Let this be just a start of so many nights like this. Take a lover's vow and then seal it with a kiss. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited, waited just to love you. Now that I have found you, don't ever go. Thank you.